I'm Gab, he's Jules, cold and rainy and pretty horrid over West London today. But it's not cold and rainy and horrid in here because what a show we have.
Incredible.
Jules, Premier League title race. It's a three-way race, and we have new league leaders. That's right, Manchester City beating Luton 5-1. What a twist.
Yeah.
Because Arsenal and Liverpool both losing at home. I want to start with Liverpool because I'm just going to submit this theory to you. I don't think there is any parallel between Liverpool losing on Thursday to Atalanta and losing to Palace in this game. I think they're two completely different games.
Yeah.
And I think if you're Klopp, you need to emphasize that.
Yeah, and I think he did in a way, because we saw a reaction. It was a much better performance against Palace than it was against Atalanta, with the strongest team possible against Palace, which was not the case against Atalanta, basically. And maybe his mistake against Atalanta was to rotate the squad and rotate the team and make changes, maybe. I just think it's one of those days against Palace where they just could not score. Their XG is high. They had many chances, many shots. It just would not go in. And Palace, to be fair, were a threat, especially in the first half on the counter. They were very good in the first half. But the goal is too easy to concede. And Liverpool, we've said it before, I think it's 11 games now where they concede, and they conceded first again in this game. And even if you are home, when you concede first against Brighton, teams like that, you don't always come back.
I agree this game could have finished 5-3 to Liverpool.
Yeah.
But equally, if Palace go to 3-0 lead at halftime, which would have been entirely possible when you think
and
of the other Mateta chance and Robertson off the line. I mean, psychologically, that does a ton of damage. And we can talk about the strikers missing chances, although we also have to give a lot of credit to Palace. I got to go back to this. Van Dijk and Konate. You're telling me Konate is now the best defender at Liverpool and so on. I feel like the bar is really, really falling here.
But is it
those are collective meltdowns. We can't just blame everything on Endo again.
I mean, I'm not a fan of Endo. You know that. In possession, certainly in possession. Out of possession, okay, he works hard and runs a lot. But it's maybe not just him, but maybe Curtis Jones yesterday or Sunday, McAllister defensively, I mean. With the ball, it's a different story. But defensively, maybe it's a bit too open. And I don't know. I just find it so easy in that first half of Palace to go through. Look at the goal. Just that goal. At the start of that move on the left, with Olise is involved, Ezin is involved, Mitchell is involved, and Hughes is involved. Liverpool are good. Then McAllister stopped following his player. Same with Bradley.
When I watched this on Tv, they said, oh, look, they're not just about pace and counterattack. Look at this intricate passing. I'm like, yeah, but Palace aren't built for that. They can pull off this intricate passing because Liverpool aren't defending
exactly.
Well.
Exactly.
I want to hit Arsenal and Villa because I found this defeat, I want to say, more surprising, because obviously Villa are a better team than Palace, and we know they're dangerous on the break. But I think more frustrating if you're Arsenal, because you knew what Villa were going to do.
Yeah.
You knew they were going to play that way.
And you know as well that if you don't take advantage of your strong moments, like in the first half, it's a good first half from Arsenal point of view. Trossard has to score, for example. In the biggest chance, I think, of the day, both teams combined.
We agree that's a Trossard mistake. It's like, look at Emi Martinez. What a great song. I'm like, what? Come on. Like, exactly. He's got no idea.
But even his foot, the way Trossard hit the ball with his foot, is aiming at Martinez instead of aiming at the other side.
It's a side foot finish. Come on.
And I think the frustration grew in the second half. I think they grew tired too. And Villa were great. And I saw Villa on Thursday night against Lille. They were really average. And Lille, at times, wiped the floor with them, had more shots, more expected goals, more possession, more shots on target, everything. That's Lille. And I didn't think I could see Villa reacting the way they did at the Emirates, and they did. It was a masterclass tactically, especially in the second half, because in the first half, at times, they struggled. But the second half, they took their chances really well.
Well, to what degree were Arsenal conditioned by one of my favorite subjects, which is, one, to start moving the Gabriel Jesus to center forward, because obviously you have to rotate a little bit. You got Bayern coming up.
I don't know. It's a good. I would have played Havertz as a nine. I would have played Jorginho from the start.
And then when he's too tired against Bayern, you get knocked out. Then
But I don't know. Then you might be knocked out against Bayern next week as well, or this week.
I think on paper, this was actually a game, because you knew Villa were going to play that way. it might have been a game for Georgie to the start to unlock them when they sit deep. On the other hand, Georgie in transition, shielding the back too.
I know, but how many transitions did they have in the first half? Only that one when Gabriel hit the ball on the back of Zinchenko, and that's it, pretty much.
I said from the beginning
that everybody would drop points, right? Yeah. And they have.
Yeah, and by the way, it's not done. City are favorites. They were favorites before. Not done. Jules, we don't just want to point out flaws. We want to give credit. We were talking about Arsenal there.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring this up. Earlier this season, when we had our man LME here, you guys kept going on about how Kamara is Villa's most important player. They can't do anything without him. Oh, and Douglas Luiz and this and that and balance and yada and blah, blah, blah. You know what? Neither of those two dudes were there. My boy Yuri Tielemans was.
And McGinn. That's not a bad.
Tielemans, who couldn't play early in the year under Emery for reasons
That's not my fault.
No.
Him and McGinn as two defensive midfielders is good. Right?
But Kamara and Douglas Luiz, though? No? Okay. All right. I just got it off my chest. Because when I'm hearing and it's 2-on-1, I'm like, I will defer to my guest, LME, and I will defer to my co-host, Jules. But come on, man. Like.
Come on, what? Listen, if McGinn Tielemans was a better pair of defensive midfielders than Luiz Kamara, they would have played, right? There's a reason why Emery used Kamara and. Well, we're not saying that they were not replaceable. We're saying that they were the best pair of sixes in this team.
They're not. Tielemans is better than both of them. Case closed. Let's not open this up. McGinn's an all-rounder for me. He's versatile, whatever, fine. He's very good.
Tielemans is not a six, though. You know that.
He's six, not a six. Eight. You sound like Thomas Tuchel. 6, 8, 10, 12, pie. Stop. It's football. The football.
Yes. Yeah. Well done to Tielemans, because that assist for the Watkins goal and the finish by Watkins, by the way, even if there's a slight deflection, it's a great finish.
Do you think Arsenal at the end, I mean, if we're going to talk about this, right, do you think it's I don't like bringing up inexperience and mental strength and whatever, but inevitably we do in these situations because it's a young team. Do you think there was a point in that game, minute 75, where Arteta might have wanted to send the message, you know what? It's great if we win the game.
Yeah, let's not lose
it. It's more important that we not lose this game because Liverpool lost earlier in the day. And, you know, maybe, and it really would be a major blow for us to lose this game, especially heading into the Bayern match.
Yeah.
I mean,
I thought that as well. I don't know if a draw is a much better result. I mean, yeah, Liverpool have lost, but City won. And I think the draw would have been felt like a defeat anyway. So you go for it. What I was more surprised is the lack of control in that second half. I don't know what happened. If physically they were really drained. But
Georgie came on too late?
Maybe the subs came on too late. But Villa played on Thursday night. So Arsenal on Tuesday night at home had two more days to recover than Villa.
And Villa have more injury problems.
True. I mean, I guess playing Lille. It's not Bayern Munich. I understand that the intensity was not the same at all in that game. I get it. But still, so I don't know if they were tired. I don't know if they had that frustration. I don't know if emotionally they could not really control their emotions because of what happened last season and because they were in a kind of similar scenario. Oh, we're going to drop points. But we said we can't drop points. We saw City winning yesterday. Maybe it's a bit of all of that. And we've said, Gab, from many weeks now, a lot will be down to how you control your emotions when you're Liverpool, City and Arsenal, and who will be able to manage those emotions well. So when you're not playing well, when you're under pressure, when you miss chances, when you're on top but you can't make it count, all those feelings that players and managers have, how you deal with them. And it felt to me that Liverpool and Arsenal yesterday on Sunday just didn't manage those emotions well enough.
Just to wrap on Arsenal before we get to Liverpool, is it basically a given at this stage, the way this team is constructed, that if Georgie doesn't start, Zinchenko has to be starting at left back? And Zinchenko got a really rough ride from Arsenal fans on social.
Yeah.
Equally, though,
I'm not sure why. No, the second half was not great, but nobody played well in that second half.
But he's the change of the team, right?
Yeah. No, I know.
So the spotlight will be on him.
Yeah.
It's more set up for his passing. I think it's a little unfair because the reality is Georgie cannot start every game, nor do you want him, nor, as I said before, you can say Villa didn't play as much in transition as they might have done in other games, but equally, if you play Georgie, they sit further back and they play more in transition. And then you've got Jorginho trying to cover that ground against the speedsters. Reveal you're wearing a Moussa Diaby shirt.
An Abu Dhabi shirt.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
2010. Moussa Diaby was
like 8, but whatever. But still, you know. But it is symbolic.
Yeah.
I know he came off and didn't score, and people might say, "Oh, with all the money they paid for him, he never. You know, maybe he didn't. He wasn't as good as people thought he would be this season, but." I thought those runs kept them on edge to the point that then when they did make the change, you know, they were there to exploit it.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And I think when you can then bring on Leon Bailey, for example, who again was bring that kind of energy and that kind of pace. And yeah, he took his goal well. There's mistakes made by pretty much the whole Arsenal defense on that first goal. It's the lack of control for a team that has been in control so much of the season, really, with the ball, without the ball, in their shape, in their defense attributes, everything. That second half was really disappointing.
All right, where does this leave them now? What do you want to see from them against Bayern? How do you set this up? Do you start Zinchenko at left back again, or do you go Tomiyasu? Kivior wasn't there because he's not fully fit.
Yeah, you would think so.
What do you do at left?
Jorginho will start and Zinchenko will be on the bench, I think.
And then best on earth at center forward and Jesus on the wing.
I mean, on the wing, it could be. I don't think it'd be a bad idea to have Martinelli facing, Kimmich or whoever plays the right back for Bayern, maybe. And then you always have the option of Gabriel Jesus if you need to even go 4-2-3-1, for example, and then just add Jesus to Havertz up front, do something like that. That's a possibility. It's only 2-2, and there's no away goals rule, as you hate. So don't change anything.
I don't hate that. You would rather have away goals?
No.
No. No. No. Okay. I've come around. I like this.
I like it because this. Go there, it's 0-0. I know you're playing away and it's hard, but it's 0-0. And just go there, don't change your plan tactically, don't change anything. And I like Arteta's reaction, to be fair, after the defeat at Villa, when he said, okay, now it's where you show what you have. Now, this is the moment now where you have to respond as players, as staff, manager, etc., and fans as well. So I like that a lot. They can go there and win, they can go there and beat Bayern, of course they can. And as we saw Bayern this weekend, we're not great either again. So if they have a chance, and I think they can bounce back. And then you go to Wolves on Saturday, and this is where you have to make it count in the league because City won't play this weekend. So you've got a chance. Even if you will have a game played more than City, This is how you put pressure on them then whenever the week after when they play the game in hand. That's where you have to make it count.
So... going back to Liverpool, obviously Klopp also has a rebuilding, sort of mini mental rebuild job to go on. I want to go back because the Atalanta game, they were, obviously they did make changes. But it's not
and
like...
They had chances as well. And nil-nil, they hit the post and the bar. Well, yeah. If Elliot scores...
So they hit the post... Seriously, let's not go back. Atalanta could have scored 6 easily.
Yeah. I'm just saying, but they had chances as well.
They had far fewer chances. Go look at... That was a terrible performance.
No. I saw it.
Palace was not a terrible performance. It was severely lacking in finishing, and it was poor defensively. What I thought was interesting, though, again, he made a triple substitution at halftime against Atalanta.
Yeah.
He made those 2 substitutions early, one at halftime, and then immediately afterwards.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, that one was an injury or what?
You think so? Otherwise, you change him at halftime. Like, yeah,
that seemed
it's
odd.
It's really weird.
He gives off the vibe of somebody who's not sure, which is not a good place for a manager.
Not
it's
sure
not something
what?
You see about Klopp.
Not sure about what?
Not sure about.
He's strong.
How to
team.
Get out of here?
You know,
not sure how to get out of this situation that I'm in. Like, I'm misreading him.
No. But did you see his reaction after the goal? When he's like, and he goes, wow. Like, wow, how bad is this defensively for my team? And to the point that he almost doesn't recognize his team. Because otherwise, you can scream and say, Virgil, what are you doing? Or, you know, Bradley, what are you doing? But instead, he's just there, shell-shocked. And just, and you read on his lip, he goes, wow. What, as in like, what, this is my team defending like this? In a game like this? When I've asked for a reaction? When it's my last season, where we can win the title? Where we've already lost the Europa League and we lost the FA Cup? Okay, we won the League Cup, but... And maybe you're right. Maybe it's him thinking, not knowing how to get out of this. Maybe not knowing really what he should do, when, with who. But also him not recognizing the team. Because for him to react like that was just like, okay, wow, that's not...
I've
seen him like that.
Yeah, I didn't see that. I agree with you. I mean, that photographed the moment. And I'm wondering, too, if... I mean, the club told us why he's leaving.
Yeah.
He's tired.
Yeah, he's tired.
He's exhausted. You know, he made that analogy with the sports car and the speed and whatever. But the reality is, once you make that admission, and once you're honest with yourself and with your employers, with the fans of your club, I have to believe Klopp knows what he's doing and he's something there. And so it follows that we're dealing with a weakened Klopp, if you will, in this situation. And it's a completely different mindset. And I can't blame him for being in that situation. I wonder to what degree maybe the players also feel it. If I'm Klopp, I feel really let down by my players, because I might have got my tactics.
I mean,
he completely misread the game against Atalanta.
Yeah, that's true.
This one, very different strikers, right? Because Atalanta, let's face it, De Ketelaere and Scamacca have about the mobility of this table, right? Relative to Eze and Olise.
Yeah, but Mateta is not very mobile either.
Tell you what, once Mateta starts running in one direction,
I know, but he's 1.92 meters.
That's fine.
He's a big boy.
Scamacca. I would take Mateta over Scamacca. Like,
in a race, you think?
In a race?
Really?
100%. Yeah.
Okay.
Tattoo game, I think Scamacca's better placed.
Style.
But what I'm saying is, against Atalanta, you're playing against a team that when they went to press you, they pressed you really, really hard.
Yeah, they were.
And they pressed you a lot positionally. Palace didn't do that. Palace played much more on the counter. When Palace did press or engage, it was more in the middle areas of the pitch. It was a completely different, approach from Glasner. That's what, to me, would be concerned. You've been let down by the finishing of your forwards. You expect a reaction. And what you said before about, I can't remember if you said this on air or off air, about leadership.
Yeah.
This is where I expect Mohamed Salah, Virgil van Dijk.
That's when your leaders have to stand.
Alisson, right? Who maybe hasn't, because he just came back.
Yeah.
He comes out and he says, guys, we can't let him go out. It can't go out like this, right? And it's difficult to do, I think, when strikers miss chances, because no striker misses a chance on purpose. But you have to kind of instill that confidence that you can do it, right?
Yeah. I think I looked at the stats. It's a goal every 14 shots or 15 shots now. In the last few games, we saw against Brighton, they came back. They were 1-0 down early. They came back. This time, they were 1-0 down early again. And they didn't come back. And on another day, Luis Diaz scores that acrobatic kind of volley that he had that I think Henderson doesn't know anything about how he saved that. Curtis Jones scores. Jota scores. The Curtis Jones one is a big chance. It's a one-on-one with the keeper, right? Salah scores the one where, you know, there's the header and Mitchell somehow blocks it. But they didn't score. And I remember Klopp after the United game when they had so many chances, remember? And he said, We rushed the finishing all the time in this game. I would have liked the boys to take an extra touch. I think we mentioned it on the show after. And yesterday, watching that Liverpool performance, again, it looked like at times they made the wrong decision. They could have managed those chances and the way they tried to finish them better than what they did. And I don't know if that's a confidence thing. I don't know if it's what you do at training. I'm not really sure, because they are far more capable of that. Darwin, Diaz, Jones, Jota, Salah. I mean, they are top players and finishers.
Well, even Jota misses like that.
Yeah.
You know something's wrong. It's interesting. I mean, again, you have the Anfield crowd, you have the urgency, you know that City won, it's inevitable to get that balance between intensity and wanting to be high energy, and then switching down to almost like, you know, zen-like composure when you're finishing. Yeah. I don't think that's easy. Equally, I don't know that all these strikers are equally to blame. I have no problem.
No. But for example, it's not to blame.
No. I think there is an element to blame, because I expect I don't think Mohamed Salah has played well for a good stretch now.
Yeah.
Whereas somebody like Luis Diaz, I don't know what I can tell him, right? Mm. Darwin is frustrating because he misses chances, but then he's always done that, which is, you know.
And he gives you so much.
And he gives you a lot of other things. Sure. Start worrying when Cody Gakpo is Cody Gakpo. Again, I don't think he's the right signing unless you just want an energy guy, right? Yeah. So I think almost think you have to take a different approach with all these people. You know, I don't think Diaz is somebody that you tell, be more composed. It's not the problem with Diaz.
Yeah.
Problem is people. He's done his part. So it's almost like you have to tailor this messaging. But I think for me, single biggest thing for Liverpool, and I think we both believe this, is this title race isn't over.
No.
They may not turn it around against Atalanta, because turning around 3 goals is a really, really tall order.
Yeah.
But then you know what? One less distraction. Every league game is your cup final between now and the end of the season. You're only going to have, half a dozen left if you go out?
6, yeah.
That's it. Go and make it count. Wait for City to trip up. They do trip up occasionally. They are not invulnerable.
Do they? Can City trip up now? Where? At Brighton? Away at Spurs?
I mean, I don't have the fixture list in front of me, but we see this every year. You're playing a relegation threatened team. They go out. They get physical. Somebody does something stupid, gets hurt, gets sent off. You get a couple calls against you. It happens all the time.
True. But if there's one team that you put your house on that could go six wins in 6 games coming up, it's City, right?
Yeah, now, they're the most likely. But again,
now when you've gifted them that lead in the table, they're not going to let it go. Surely not again. No?
Look, City were my favorites when they were third, so I'm not going to change that now that they're first, right? But I'm pretty sure there's going to be more twists and turns. And I will bet you lunch, Jules, that we will have, between now and the end of the season, City may win the league on the last day of the season, but I will bet you lunch that we will have a new league leader between now and the end of the season. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Premier League. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Bayer Leverkusen beat up Werder Bremen 5-0 to win their first ever German title. It's a Florian Wirtz hat trick. Jules, we knew this was happening. Yeah. What a ride it has been.
Incredible. Still unbeaten now. Was it 44 games or something?
43, I believe.
Remarkable. Undefeated, of course, till now. I don't know if they can keep it up until the end of the season. Now that they've won it, they might relax a little bit. But they're very capable of. Incredible. Xabi Alonso, for his first full season as manager, winning the title is incredible. And he can still win the German Cup, and he can still win the Europa League as well. To see Florian Wirtz, after the injury that he had, coming back to this kind of level, what a genius. Granit Xhaka, maybe a few eyebrows were raised when they signed him for 20 million from Arsenal in the summer. Yeah. Thinking like, really?
My eyebrow was raised.
Yeah, not mine, because I knew how important he could be, more in the leadership No, but you don't have to pull that face. It's true. More for the leadership.
No, I was wrong.
Yeah, but I wasn't.
Maybe you do.
Yeah, I was wrong. And everything, you know, from Grimaldo to Frimpong to Boniface. What a season they're having.
Do you know what impressed me most, Jules? I looked at, of the 13 players who played the most minutes in the league, 9 of them were there before Xabi Alonso arrived, right?
Yeah.
So how often do we see the manager comes in, he's like, oh, I'll need 7 transfer windows to bring in my players. I hope the club backs me.
Yeah.
It's not what Xabi Alonso did. Xabi Alonso took the guys who were already there. That's Jeremy Frimpong, a great example,
yeah,
and made him better. Jonathan Tah made him better. Lucas Radetzky made him better. The only guys they brought in were Hoffman, who, you know, on a release clause, $10 million.
Yeah.
Boniface, who, yeah, scored a lot of goals, did really well. This is a guy who couldn't break double figures to the Belgian league. The aforementioned Xhaka at 31, who, let's face it, was surplus to requirements at Arsenal, because if he wasn't Arsenal, he would have signed a new
on his contract.
So. He would have been given a new contract, and he would have taken it.
No, if
he
not felt, sure. It would have given felt, 1 year?
Oh, yeah, no, it was always his dream to go live in Leverkusen.
No, no, it's not that. I don't think he would have taken 1 year at 31.
No, no, but you would have given him more than 1 year if Arsenal believed it was necessary to keep him.
Yeah,
I'm not blaming Arsenal here, but it's obvious, right? Like, Declan Rice is coming. What are we going to do with this dude? Enough, right?
Yeah.
You made me forget who the fourth guy was.
Grimaldo.
Oh, and Grimaldo. Grimaldo, right? The circus act with the free kicks in Benfica. Grimaldo, who has 2 more caps for Spain than you do. He's 28 years old. Yeah. He's been there the whole time. I don't want to go through the list of people who played left back for Spain, after Jordi Alba, right? The geeks and freaks, and nobody considered Grimaldo. These are the 4 guys he brought in.
Yeah, yeah.
The other people are people who were local and who he made better, from Palacios to Hincapié. I mean, this is impressive. Andrzej,
it's really impressive. And they were 17th when he took over, like, kind of this last season. And now they're champions. Well done. Incredible. And Gab, this is only the 3rd ever piece of silverware in more than 100 years of history at the club. They finished 2nd loads of times, the famous Leverkusen nickname. And yet some traditional German fans still call them a plastic club.
Yeah. And look, this is because they are owned by Bayer, the pharmaceutical giant. And when they introduced the 50+1 rule, they got an exemption in 1999. And they don't fit the fan control model, which, whichever way you feel about it, certainly they're less offensive than Leipzig or Hoffenheim in that sense. And whatever, the fans who go there, the fans who suffered, the fans who saw them, remember they were on the verge of the treble in 2001-02?
Yeah.
And they frittered away a 5-point lead with 3 games to go, and they lost a German Cup final, and they lost to that Zidane fella in Glasgow. This hurts. This hurts. This, to me, is, you know, I have a lot of respect for those fans who were there and stuck it out. Mm. And plastic club, whatever. 4th highest wage bill in Germany. And I think that tells you what you need to know. Manchester United draw 2-2 at Bournemouth as Bruno Fernandes scores 2 goals and Erik ten Hag. Afterwards, he said, well, we didn't deserve more than a draw. Jules, I agree. You agree with, I assume you agree with your Dutch friend for once.
Okay, so he said that. He also said a lot of other nonsense, completely in denial, by saying, it was great. There was a lot of positives because this, because that.
Oh, come on, focus please on the part where you agree with him.
Please. The Clover goal for Bournemouth, the 2nd goal, the Bournemouth player from Senesi, they're literally walking into the United half to the goal. I mean, I don't know. Garnacho is doing... They were structurally so bad. I mean, to take off Garnacho at halftime, I think because he was not defending at all on Kerkers, is probably the biggest thing in this game. They're just, it's not good enough. That's all. Again, it's an incredible gap. But United, to continue on them, have conceded more shots than anybody else in the Premier League this season. And only Luton and Sheffield United are worse when it comes down to expected goals conceded. Is it all down to their injuries at the back?
No, it's not, funnily enough. No, because they weren't great last year either. They finished 3rd last year, and yet they were 9th in shots conceded, and they were 7th in expected goals conceded, which, you know, isn't great for a team that finishes 3rd.
No.
There is clearly a structural issue. Now, is it a big mitigating factor that you've had to play Maguire and so on, and mention Lisandro Martinez out, and Shaw and Varane out, and blah, 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 blah? Of course. But like you said, there is a structural issue.
Massive.
And I think if If I were a Glazer or Ratcliffe, I would go to Van Gaal and tell him, listen, explain to me, sorry, Van Gaal, yeah, close enough, Ten Hag, I would say, explain to me how you're going to fix it, because this will decide whether you stay.
But he's not. Get rid of him. He's not going to fix anything.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, Jules, we're not done because we got more quick hits. Manchester City beat Luton 5-1 to go top of the league as Rodri finally gets his much-needed rest. Jules, the goals might have come late, but this game was so one-sided.
One-sided. But credit to Luton as well for keep going. They scored a nice goal by Barkley. Lovely step-over finish. They hit the bar as well. They kept going, but they were never going to win away at the Etihad.
They weren't, but didn't you feel that until the Kovacic goal goes in? Like,
yeah, maybe.
The bomb got a little less squeaky, to use a Ferguson.
Lovely goal by Kovacic, by the way. Great volley. Great goal by Doku. Gvardiol again on his right foot. I don't know what's going on with Gvardiol. Erling Haaland with the penalty goal, but he will take that.
Oh, you're not going to give him credit for the Hashimoto own goal? Or
I mean, one of the best home goals you will see this season. For sure, Foden rested as well. You don't need Foden and Rodri to be Luton at home, well done.
Can I say something about Luton? Just two quick things. One is 12 players out for this game, which for a team like Luton especially makes a ton of difference.
That's true.
And the other thing is, Kabore doesn't play because in the Premier League, if you're on loan, you're not allowed to play against your parent club. Yeah. This is a stupid, stupid, stupid rule, which I think only exists here. Just get rid of it. It's so dumb.
It is. Gab Real Madrid, who faced City on Tuesday at the Bernabeu in the Champions League second leg, won away at Mallorca. Thanks to a deflected Aurelien Tchouameni goal. How did they look?
Real Madrid looked fine. They made five changes. Brahim Diaz is really good. I told you this. We all know this. Lunin, not so much.
One great save.
He looked jittery, though, at the end. I nearly gave up that goal to Marici as well. Wasn't great against City either. I think you kind of have to hold your breath on that one. Also, pretty sure Nacho's going to start against City because if Militao were fit, you would have given him at least 45 minutes.
Definitely.
Instead, you only played 1 minute at the end.
It's true. And racial abuse towards Tchouameni after his goal? Come on, please.
Let's move beyond that. And let's take action for once.
Yeah.
João Félix scores the only goal as Barcelona, or indeed Barca's B team, since they made nine changes, win away to Cadiz 1-0. Jules, you know my thoughts about whether they should have him stick around next season, and that would be new.
Yeah.
But where do you stand?
I'm a bit conflicted. I think it'd be wise not to. You're right, because he's expensive, because I don't think he really fits, especially out of possession, what a team like that would do, whoever is the next manager. And then sometimes I see him and he's so good. He's so gifted. Really is. I mean, the overhead kick in this game, great goal. It's not a it's not a Cristiano overhead kick in the sense that he's not as high as Cristiano, for example, was. But it's a lovely goal. He hit the post. He was offside at the start, but so it would not begin. But the way he turned, he's so smooth, so beautiful to watch that I think, man, there's a player there, so much. And yet, you're right, maybe it would be a luxury to keep him, and they can't afford a luxury like that, Barcelona. In many ways, financially, in terms of what he actually gives you consistently in a game, in a season, because he's not consistent enough. So I think they will do what you think, and they won't keep him. But sometimes I promise you, I watch him and I'm like, wow, he's just so good.
And to be clear, before people obviously took a pay cut this season, but Atletico Madrid, if they just give him away, they still have, he has a contract through 2029, incredibly. So like that's still like 50 million odd of amortization. So I think they can't just give him away.
They can loan him again, but it doesn't make much sense for an Atletico point of view. The Roma game against away at Udinese, Gab, was suspended on Sunday and then abandoned with the score 1-1 with 20 minutes to go after Evan Ndika collapsed on the pitch. This was frightening.
Terrifying. Evan Ndika, by the way, Paris born and bred.
Of course.
The good news is it doesn't appear to have been a heart issue. It may have had something to do with the trauma he suffered. He took a blow to the ribs earlier. it brought to mind Eriksson. It brought to mind a lot of bad stuff that we don't want to think about. What was great was the reaction, I think, of the players when Daniele De Rossi, after he saw him go down, after he was stretchered off, he looked at his face and said, something's not right. So he asked the referee to stop the game for a couple minutes while they checked on him. They did an electrocardiogram. They said he has to be rushed to hospital, came back out, both sets of players agreeing, we don't want to play in these conditions.
Yeah, yeah.
The great reaction from the crowd as well. Most important thing, I mean, they will replay the 18 minutes.
Who cares?
Most important is that
He's fine. He posted a photo from the hospital.
Giving a big thumbs up.
Yeah.
Newcastle, despite their many injuries, destroy Tottenham 4-0. And Ange Postecoglou says he's concerned, when he asked him what concerns you, he says, like, everything.
Yeah, yeah. Remember we talked after the Fulham defeat the Spurs had away, where they didn't show up and he was cross, Heung-min Son was cross as well. And we said, they're starting to be a bit predictable now. And they have to be careful that those kind of games don't happen too often now between now and the end of the season. Otherwise, they're going to miss out on Champions League, top five, you know, whatever. I mean, this was worse than the Fulham defeat. Credit to Eddie Howe and Newcastle to go back three, to weigh them. I think they had 27% possession of the ball. They destroyed them. And it could have more than four, to be fair. And there was nothing from a Spurs point of view. Taking off Son after 57 minutes... For Ange, big decision. He was clearly not happy. Madison should have been sent off.
It was the second straight game where Madison should have been sent off.
It's like, I don't know. I think it's really, really bad right now. And yeah, they're okay because behind them, they're 10 points behind Newcastle and United as well. So,
game in hand.
Yeah, exactly. Goes from Rafael Guerrero, Paris born and bred, and Thomas Müller give a much-changed Bayern a 2-0 win over Köln. Gab, they're still good for second place, right?
Yeah, they're head-to-head with Stuttgart, who also won, so that's up in the air. I don't think, who cares, second,
yeah,
third, who cares,
yeah,
stage,
really,
honestly. What I thought was interesting is they're sort of auditioning for the left-back position. I think it should be Guerrero. Started Guerrero in midfield, whatever. The focus is entirely on Bayern. On Arsenal midweek. By the way, Matisse Tell, he should play every minute of every game between now and the end of the season at this point. Who cares if you finish second or third?
I know. And by the way, Kingsley Coman with a really bad groin injury that might miss the Euro, which was really, really bad news.
Atletico Madrid beat Girona 3-1 as your boy Antoine Griezmann makes history. But how about, I know you're going to tell me, Sebol's records, blah, blah, blah. But how about some love for the top scorer in La Liga, Mr. Artem Dovbik?
Yeah, do you like more the goal or the big miss at the end?
I like the fact that he scored 17 goals this season.
Do you like the miss at the end as well? No, I'm joking, Girona fans, if there's any. I thought it was a great game to start with. I love the game. From start to finish, it was so open, loads of chances. I love the Correa goal because Morata gets the ball, prevented the ball from going out on the line. Great turn, great cross. It was lovely. Griezmann, of course, on top. I mean, he's so good. I love him so, so much. And Girona kept playing. They kept playing. They kept attacking. They could have scored more goals. They could have finished 4-3, 5-4. It was great. And yeah, Dovvik is great. Even if he missed that sitter at the end, he's still great.
Stop having a go at Dovvik. No! 6 seasons, by the way, 20-plus goals for Griezmann.
Amazing. Milan have to come from 2 goals down twice, 2-0 and 3-1, to snatch a draw at Sassuolo 3-3. Gab, were they just distracted by the Europa League and that second against Roma on Thursday?
Yeah, look, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter. So they made a lot of changes in this game, especially at the back. Chao and Simon Kier had a really, really, really rough ride. In fact, on one page, it could have been 4-1 down. Chukwueze had a couple goals disallowed for, you know, semi-automatic offsides. But hey, if you're off by even a whisker, them's the rules. So deal with it. I don't think there should be any further fallout from this game, frankly. They got the derby next week. That's important. Mm-hmm. And even more important, Thursday night against Roma in the Europa League. Stuttgart rolled to a 3-0 win over Eintracht Frankfurt, knocking them out of the Champions League hunt, effectively, not mathematically. Needless to say, that man Guirassy scores again. I asked you this question. If Guirassy hadn't gotten injured, if there hadn't been the Cup of Nations, player, would he have scored more than Harry freaking
player
Kane?
Player of the season for me, without a doubt. This season. You can give it to a Bayer Leverkusen player, of course, if you want, whoever you want. But what Guirassy is doing with Stuttgart is amazing. With the injury, as you mentioned, with AFCON 2, the fact that he's there, it's incredible. It's a goal every 70 minutes or something ridiculous.
17. It feels like 17.
Yeah, it feels like 17. And you kind of, you watch them and you know they're going to win and you know they're going to steamroll the opposition and you know he's going to score, and maybe Undav as well if you're lucky. It's just a great story. And Leverkusen obviously taking all the limelight, and rightly so. But Stuttgart deserve a lot of love as well, and Sebastian Hoeneß for the season they're having. Torino and Juventus in the derby. Battle to a 0-0 draw. Gab, time for your weekly Max Allegri update. What have their shareholders been told about this future?
So,
was that game, by the way?
It wasn't great. I mean, Juve tried a little bit in the first half. Vlahovic, not good. And then in the second half, Juve could have lost it because they got super defensive. Torino came close with Sanabria, and then in injury time, Lazaro as well, just over the bar.
Yeah.
If you're Max Allegri, you're not playing for the present. What are you trying to do? Like, catch Milan in second place? It makes no freaking difference. You will be in the Champions League next year.
Yeah.
Build something for next year.
Is he doing that? No.
No, he's not.
Exactly.
You know what? I would have, if I were you, much rather, all right, you showed some positivity for 45 minutes, just like you did against Fiorentina, just like you did against Lazio. Keep it going. And if you lose, guess what? Nobody cares. But find out what you have. Show us that you can play a certain way that actually works in the modern game. This is for the shareholders. Alcan wrote to everybody, also spoke to Giuntoli, and said that next year they're going to lean heavily on Juve Next Gen, which is their under-23 team in the third division, and they're going to continue to try to grow in line with financial regulations, which is a euphemism for saying we're not going to spend money. He does not mention Max Allegri once. It's been widely reported that he hasn't spoken to Max Allegri.
But if you follow that message, they're not going to sack him because that would cost him, like 20 million or something?
Yeah, maybe Max Allegri says, hey, do I really want to stick around here and have another season? Yeah, I would hope so.
Yeah.
But enough. Jules, how did Paris Saint-Germain get on this weekend? Oh, wait, they didn't play. Hey. Just like Marseille and Lille didn't play. Some folks might be wondering why.
Well, because to give them a rest before their European quarterfinal, second leg.
If they all advance, you're going to do this before the semifinals too? Just
maybe. I don't know. I think it's good.
And Ligue 1 in August? Why not?
I think it's good. Just a little bit of help from the league, the French Federation. So the players had a weekend off. All the staff had a weekend off. It was good. They could go away. Kylian Mbappe went to Switzerland, for example.
He went skiing?
No, he went to like a watch show or something with a brand that he represents that is the same as mine, by the way. That was lovely. Some people went to the beach.
Rolex, by the way.
It's not. It's another one. I like that. I like that you can get a rest. If you're Lille, for example, you get a rest this weekend. You don't play Villa battling in for a great win at Arsenal, and then on Thursday they come to you and you're prepared. I mean, let's see how many qualify Tuesday and Thursday. It might be zero, it might be one, it might be two, it might be three. We don't know. But
Marseille playing Benfica, of course. The 2-1 the first leg?
Yeah, they lost 2-1. So all three French teams lost in the first.
But they'll be well rested. And maybe Mbappe might have some new watches, so that's good.
Oh, my God. Chelsea kick off against Everton in a few hours on Monday night. But in the meantime, Gab, they filed their company accounts for 22-23, showing reduced losses of 90 million, down from 121 the year before. So that's good, right?
Yeah, good. Very good.
But this was also down to the sale of two hotels at Stamford Bridge for 77 million, which raised a few eyebrows.
Yeah, it raised a few eyebrows because, Chelsea are owned by Bluco.
Yeah.
And
who did they sell the hotel to?
They sold it to something called Bluco 22 Properties, which is real estate. Don't laugh.
I'm not. Okay. I didn't think it was allowed, Steve, to sell yourself something for a lot of money. But
you're allowed to deal with a related party if it's at fair market value. This is what... this is what Chelsea contend, and they say that, look, I'm not an expert in the cost of hotel buildings in Kensington, Chelsea, or indeed Fulham, because it's just across the border. But they sold two large buildings with hotel rooms in them for a combined $77 million, which, you know, seems like a reasonable price. It doesn't seem crazy. Chelsea said they had them independently evaluated. They say they asked the Premier League, hey, can we do this? You know, and again, people say, well, what's different about you guys losing your minds over Man City and Paris Saint-Germain and their sponsorships? Well, the difference is here, I take Paris Saint-Germain as an example.
Yeah, yeah.
No. Their $120 million sponsorship with Qatar. Here they're selling something real.
Yes.
A hotel.
Yes.
Which is a tangible asset, and they have independent people valuing it. $120 million to sponsor the Qatar Tourist Authority.
Red exposure.
Yeah, tremendous, right? I mean, I think that's a difference, right? And it comes down to whether you believe it or not. For me, so the Swiss Ramble, who is the GOAT of financial bloggers, he says it was necessary to comply with profit sustainability rules. He says they come very, very close. What I thought was interesting buried in here is the Year of Madness, his first season, when they had Tuchel and Graham Potter and Frank Lampard.
Oh, my God.
It ended up costing them $46 million between compensation to Brighton, payoff for Potter, and payoff for Tuchel. Now, they included this in the wages. So their wages actually shot up from $340 million to more than $400 million. Remember they said they reduced the wages? I suspect they included this stuff in the wages so that, because obviously it's not going to be there next season unless they decide to sack Pochettino and give him a $50 million payout, rather than exceptional items, so they can show how their wages are going back down again from $400 million. Maybe it's that. I don't know. Their operating losses. Now, again, there's the actual losses, which are that a football club makes, which includes player trading, and because of amortization and so on, normally the actual losses are always, your books are much better with actual stuff than operating losses. But operating losses, just money you take in, money goes out. They lost $249 million, which is the highest ever recorded. Now, I should say that in the Premier League as a whole, only one team, Brentford, recorded a profit in operating losses.
Yeah, so it's not last season.
So most teams lose money.
That's a lot of money.
But they don't lose a quarter of a billion.
Yeah.
Very, very uphill, I think.
They have to sell
Chelsea
in January then, in June, in the summer.
I think we know that. I mean, they'll get some money back for Lewis Hall, we said. Madsen. If they want to sell Madsen, they'll get some money back. And, you know, that'll help because I think they count as economy products. But still, it's not a good jumping off point.
Yeah, not a good look.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Athletic Bilbao are held to a 1-1 draw at home by Villarreal, who have to play a half with 10 men. Jules, is this where they say goodbye to the Champions League dreams? Because it's 4 points. They're not going to make that up.
Nah, I don't think so. It's possible, of course. Still, I think they will struggle after an incredible week of celebrations.
Okay. Maybe, the company,
maybe
hungover.
Too much celebration the week on the barge, on the river, in all the bars, everything, everywhere. And rightly so as well. Maybe that's just a little bit too tired then for that game. Let's see. Listen, they finished fifth with the Copa del Rey. I think they would still be very happy with that. They would have signed for that at the start of the season. Amazing job that Ernesto Valverde is doing at the club. And let's see how far they can go next season and who they can keep and who they might sell. But yeah, this was the game really they had to win to keep the pressure on the top four.
By the way, my least favorite people in the world, just about, are all those people who say, oh no, it's all about silverware and medals and blah, 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 show us your medals, right? Which I think is so dumb. It's not. It's about success. It's about relative to resources and whatever. And also it's about community and what this means. And I think between Leverkusen and Athletic Bilbao, you can see that one title in those places means as much as 10 titles for Bayern or Real Madrid or Juventus or City or whatever.
That's very true. The FA has revealed that the Premier League clubs have spent more than $500 million on agent fees in the last two transfer windows, with Chelsea and Manchester City leading the way. Guys, sounds a lot.
It is a lot. Manchester City, people might be a bit surprising given that it covers a season when they didn't do a lot of transfer activity.
Yeah.
That probably is explained with the fact that the season before, when they got Haaland and stuff, they probably spread those agent payments out over the life of the contract. What I would guard against is, A, I would like more transparency. I would like to know what the commission paid for each transfer was. That would be far more meaningful. And more meaningful would be, remember, when a player moves, especially when they move, you know, both sides. So first of all, again, if you're watching from the States, this isn't Jerry Maguire, right? These aren't the players. These aren't the agents representing the players who are getting paid, right? Some of it. But they get paid by the clubs. They don't get paid by their clients, which is a walking, talking conflict of interest. But let's not go there because nobody seems to care about that. But also people get paid as intermediaries, and that is the bulk of the payments. So it's pretty obvious that if Chelsea or City buy a player from, say, Shakhtar Donetsk, if they want to show a lower payment to intermediary, then they can easily increase the transfer fee and have Shakhtar Donetsk pay it at their end.
Yeah.
Equally, the reverse. They maybe want to show a higher one because the other party wants to show more, then they lower the fee. So there's this figure on its own isn't, I think, that significant, other than it's a big business.
It's a lot of money.
What time is it? It's John Texter time! Olympique Lyonnais come from two goals down with 20 minutes to go against Brest and an Ainsley Maitland-Niles penalty in the 16th minute of injury time seals it. Jules, this was wild. A good weekend for our boy John Texter.
John Texter, well done, JT. Amazing. Amazing game, really. If you watched it, considering PSG were not playing in Lille and Marseille and Monaco either, this was the game, really, that you had to watch on Sunday night, and it didn't disappoint because Lyon have been great, we've said that, since Stone Wise took over under Pierre Sage. No teams have won more points than them since Pierre Sage has been in charge, so well done to
them. Did you get Texter trophy? Just for that part of the season?
Yeah.
I mean, no, John Texter, not
Stone. Yeah.
The one that was stolen from him in Brazil.
And then Brest, who are very good, and you like them a lot. Gab, who scored 3 goals in 8 minutes in the second half after the hour mark, looking like they're going to win this. And then Lyon to come back like that with that penalty in the 106th minute. It was just incredible at the Groupama Stadium. It erupted when Maitland-Niles scored. It was just great. Great game.
I must have been 50,000 people singing John Texter's name at the final whistle.
Gab, we left it late on purpose, of course, but will Inter care that they were held 2-2 by Cagliari?
I don't think so. I mean, it has a material effect, which means that if they get a draw in the derby next weekend, that won't be
just
enough.
Just a draw is enough, not even win.
No, they have to win now. Draw would not be enough.
It wouldn't be enough. That's
so big point for Cagliari. Move on. I mean, I think it's people say, oh, but they don't look at sharp and determined. Like, how can they?
Yeah.
They're on the beach now, and they deserved it. They're there.
Yeah.
They have every right to do this, I think, at this stage.
Completely.
Leipzig beat up Wolfsburg 3-0 to stay neck and neck with Borussia Dortmund in fourth place. Jules, Danny Olmo scoring again.
Yeah.
Not just him, but his friend Cesco and Openda, too.
Yeah, Cesco, Openda, great partnership up front, great performance again. They've been fantastic for most of the season, really. Yes, sometimes they drop points and they were maybe a little bit inconsistent, but what a job Marco Rose has been doing, and what a great race for fourth we have behind Leverkusen, Bayern and Stuttgart between Dortmund and Leipzig. So let's see. May the best win, is that what you say? May the best team win. Yeah. And speaking of Dortmund, they also won this weekend. They beat Gladbach away 2-1. Although, once again, they make life very difficult for themselves.
It's just so stupid.
They're
2-0 up. 2-0 up. Manage the freaking game. Again, we said this so many times. And you're 2-0 up. And some of it out of their hands. You get Haller. Then he gets hurt and whatever. Fine. But Kareem freaking Adeyemi, dude.
Know,
you go like 9 months without scoring. You come back. You have a couple of games. You're the fastest things on two legs. And then you get two yellow cards in the space.
That's so silly.
You get yourself sent off and you leave them to play with 10 men the rest of the way.
This really
matters.
Yeah, it does.
I you want to blame Terzic? Fine. He's going to be the fall guy for this. But it's got to be so frustrating.
Yeah, definitely.
Jules, we're getting semi-automatic offside in the Premier League next season. Although not at the start of the season.
No,
because
why? So they voted too late, so it can't be ready.
I don't know. Supply chain issues, Strait of Hormuz, who knows? So it's going to come after the first international break. But are you excited?
I am very happy. I don't know if he will sort out all the problems, but certainly all those dodgy incidents where the lines were drawn, the line was drawn by some douchebag on the wrong side or the wrong place or diagonal. There won't be any
of
that.
It's not. They're drawn by referees. They're drawn by referees in the VR box.
Yeah, who clearly are not good in geometry.
Well, no, but that's not their job. Like, you can't have somebody reward him his entire career for being a good referee.
I know, but how hard is it to draw a line normal, like a straight line, for example?
Obviously, it's something that the computer does better.
None of that anymore. I'm happy. It works well in the Champions League, I think. So hopefully it will work well for them.
Can I make a bold prediction about the commentariat and the punditocracy and all the ex-players littering airwaves who don't pay attention? As soon as they start showing those graphics and diagram, what we've seen with like the 3D images, and it shows that somebody's like 0.2 millimeters offside, they're going to start flipping out all over again. And they're going, oh, you've got this daylight, blah, blah,
I'm
blah.
Not sure.
So I go, no, because
this
is how they roll. It's like the, I don't know. I know it's going to happen. I think it's a good thing. They've come to accept, and weirdly, they all accept the goal decision system, right?
Yeah.
Even though they don't sit there and be like, oh, 0.1. They accept whatever picture appears on the screen. It's like gospel.
So it'd be the same.
It's like God's come down from Mount Olympus.
It'd be the same.
All right, let's hope so.
Napoli are held 2-2 at home by Frosinone, who come from behind twice. Gab, no Champions League hopes for them at this point.
No, I don't think so. Luciano Spalletti came back.
I know,
the stadium.
He saw him there, first time.
He was smiling. He was bald, head warm. I think that ship has sailed. I expect a big rebuild this summer. I wouldn't be surprised. Well, I don't think Osimhen's going to be there next year. Osimhen, who scored, by the way, 13 goals for him this season in the league, despite his injury. Politano, another great goal.
Yeah, very nice. Alex Meret, not so good.
Meret, didn't cover himself in glory, but whatever. I'm so curious to see where they go with the rebuild, but it looks like they said, all right, we're going to cash in. I don't know if Kvaratskhelia is going to stay, because, of course, he has the long contract and stuff. But if he has a big Euros, he could go too.
Yeah.
Inter Miami went away to Sporting KC 3-2 as Luis Suarez scores the winner, and that Lionel Messi fella gets on the score sheet too.
Yeah, I mean, record crowd as Kansas City.
This is the MLS marketing machine. Like,
it doesn't matter.
It's not a record crowd. It's the fourth highest crowd in MLS history. But it's a record crowd. But it's what? It's a record crowd for KC. You know what? All they do is they add one folding chair every time and they set a new record.
It doesn't matter.
70,000 fans. That's all you need to know.
It doesn't matter. It was a great occasion. Messi was there. He showed up. He was good. I love that when he arrived in the tunnel, Patrick Mahomes, who is a part owner of Sporting Kansas City.
Is he? Supposedly,
Was there with those ridiculous, like, long glasses, you know, that cyclists have as well. In the tunnel, like in the dressing rooms. I'm not sure. You should not keep sunglasses indoors anyway. It's for the sun, for a reason. Anyway,
well, it depends. If you...
Messi,
I didn't have a problem when Stevie Wonder does it.
No, I know, but this is Patrick Mahomes.
Okay.
And Messi arrives and gives him a lovely hug. I suspect he recognized him even with the glasses. I mean, I guess the hair.
I suspect somebody told Lionel Messi.
Because they all arrived all together, and he comes out of the door, Mahomes, and then Messi is there. So I don't know, but that was lovely.
Messi does not strike me as an NFL fan at all.
No, but if you're in the States.
I think somebody's in the States. Somebody said, hey, Pat Mahomes is a really major star. Look out for him.
But nobody says that before the hug, though. That's what I mean. So I don't think so. To the point that I wonder if he knew who that was that he gave a hug to or not.
Isn't Mahomes like a foot taller than Messi?
Yeah. And he's like through the door as well. And it's just, I don't know, it was funny.
For the Wembanyama Messi meeting.
I think two Messis on top of each other probably reached the head of Victor.
Yeah, but remember the picture of Tom Brady? Tom Brady, who's a tall man, right? Next to Wembanyama, and Tom Brady looks like a child.
I know. I mean, there was one the other day with another NBA player. Maybe Bradley Beal or somebody like that who's not the bigger. And Victor was already... Oh, my God. I would love that photo. This was back on Friday, Gab. Lazio beat Salernitana 4-1. And still, Luis Alberto was unhappy. And after the game, said that he wants to terminate his contract, although he renewed it not that long ago. Gab, why is everything always so difficult with Lazio? And is Igor Tudor to blame for it?
No, I think the reason everything's always so difficult with Lazio is because they're owned by Claudio Lotito.
Yeah.
God goes out of his way to punish Claudio Lotito for being Claudio Lotito and doing Claudio Lotito things. I know Tudor has a history of of falling out with players.
Clashes,
it just
yeah.
got there. I don't think I don't think it can be that. Luis Alberto is volatile. You know what? You want to do this? Put your money where your mouth is. You know, all that money you're supposed to make the next few years, say, all right, sorry, made a mistake, give it back.
Yeah,
let's see.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean, I'm tired of players saying.
I mean, Lotito's saying, right, because he wants to leave, you know, on a free note, bring me a transfer fee and then I'll let you go.
Yeah, but Lotito's right, also being an ass. Like,
I know,
dude,
but he's
why?
Right, though. You've just renewed your contract. I'm not going to terminate it now so you can go on a free somewhere.
Whatever. Give me the excess money back and then you can go away.
Yeah, okay. But he's not going to do that.
Players of Corinthians women's team protested by covering their mouths and ears when their side played Santos on Friday, Jules. They were angry about the return of the two to the Santos bench of coach Clayton Lima, who had been accused of mobbing and sexual harassment and resigned pending the investigation. We should say the Santos investigation cleared him.
Yeah, they cleared him. Yeah, the club had a long investigation. Despite all the complaints against him, I can't remember how many, but there were loads of them. From,
I believe it was 19.
Yeah, 19. From current players, former players, all of that, for the toxic environment that he created within that Santos women team. They found him not guilty, so he came back. And I really liked the Corinthians players protesting the way they did. I think it was classy. It was a nice. It was the right thing to do for them. They were not happy. And I had a lot of time for that.
Other teams have protested too. What I don't understand here is, like, there is a due process, but this isn't a legal process, right? He wasn't accused. What he did didn't break the law.
No.
Right?
So they went to the club.
So it's basically it's the club,
not the police,
as his employer, doing an investigation and then deciding. If you know that your players are going to be so upset by him coming back, and knowing that. I say this with the greatest respect. This is Brazil. None of these guys have 5-year contracts and stuff.
Yeah, as we
Graham
say all the
Potter,
time. Yeah, yeah.
28 million, or Nagelsmann, 20 million in compensation. Why would you bring him back? Do you really think he's so important to your fortunes
so
that
yeah, exactly.
you'd want to go and attract all this negative publicity?
I agree. New York City FC received planning permissions for a new stadium, 25,000 seater, next to City Field in New York. Gab, is this big news?
So, first of all, okay, so it's big news in the sense that since City Football Group bought this franchise in New York, which, God, it feels like it must have been, what, like more than 10 years ago now, right?
Yeah, more than 10, yeah.
Immediately they said, oh, look, we're going to build a new stadium, blah, 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 right? And turn this into real business. They didn't. They had to play at Yankee Stadium, which Yankee Stadium's nice, but it's not a place you should play football at, right? And obviously things in New York move slowly, and there was a pandemic in between, and blah, blah, blah. And they made it a point, oh, no, we have to have it in the five boroughs. But, you know, they say that, but, like, not in Staten Island because nobody wants to go there and whatever. To differentiate themselves, I guess, from Red Bull. So they finally get this next to City Field, which is where the Mets played. It's near the where they play the U.S. Open as well, near LaGuardia Airport. And then I see it's a 25,000-seat stadium, and part of me feels a little bit crushed. Now,
why, you want it bigger?
This is how I see it, right? We've been hearing about MLS and the crowds of MLS for many years, right? We know that there are cities in MLS that routinely get 30,000, that average more than 30,000.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, when Messi comes to town, you get 70,000, whatever. This is New York. I mean, there's a...
It's a lot of sports.
It's a lot
of
people.
A lot of things. Yeah, but there's also a lot of competition, no?
Yeah, but I would hope that New York and the New York metropolitan area could support two clubs capable, both of whom have greater ambitions than drawing 25,000
games.
I know,
but two basketball teams, two hockey teams,
two
American football teams. No, I know, but still.
I'm not talking about the generic fans who are like, hey, what do we do today? Oh, let's go watch the Rangers.
No, but I'm saying there's still a lot of...
But so what? There's a lot of people.
Yeah, I know.
I would still hope that within that, there would be more, given the nature of New York, given its immigrant population, given its love of football. I find this a little bit disappointing that after 10 years of marketing by New York City FC, by City Football Group.
I see what you mean.
This is the best that you can do.
But could you just say the same about the Juventus stadium, the new stadium? Couldn't they not have built a bigger one? Surely they could have filled a bigger one than, 40,000?
So, first of all, 40,000 isn't 25,000.
No, I know, but it's Juventus. It's not New York City FC. It's Juventus.
No, I know, but the difference is you've got the stadium in Atlanta where they get 70,000.
Yeah, No.
Like, I don't, it's just disappointing, right?
Yeah.
And Juventus, by the way, not the greatest example, because of course Juve's fan base, a lot of them are not from Turin,
yeah, that's
and
true.
Whatever else.
I'm just saying that if you build that stadium, it's because you must have made research before that, yeah, this was the right amount of seats in your stadium, like Juve did, I guess.
Let me put this differently. You're basically saying that at this stage of our development, after 10 years in MLS in New York City, this is the best that we can do in terms of, this is what all our business minds, our all projections say, we can consistently sell the stadium out.
Well, I don't know. They're not stupid. If they could fill 40,000 every weekend or every home game, they would have built a 40,000-seater right. one, no?
And I guess it just makes me a little bit sad,
yeah,
that in the biggest metropolitan area, in what I assume is probably the most football-mad city in the United States.
Yeah. No, I'm with you.
You can't do better than 25,000 seats. That's all I'm saying, right? It's not, I'm not blaming them.
No. I know what you mean.
This just makes me a little bit sad. According to reports, Wrexham have been promoted to League One, which is the third tier. That's what I've read. I wouldn't know about it otherwise. Jules, because I'd be lying if I said I follow the lower leagues. So can you tell me about it? For those who aren't familiar, this is to do with the reality TV series that they're involved with, I believe.
I'm not sure if it's got to do with a TV series, but back-to-back
promotion. This is why we're talking about Wrexham, right?
Well, yeah, but still.
It's I've heard of their owners. I haven't heard of the owners of other League One
teams. No, I know, but okay. Back-to-back promotion, still very impressive. I mean, this in League One, if you're interested, you might not be like Gab interested, but if you are.
They probably are. More people are interested in this than not, just judging from the...
So they are certain, not just according to reports, or reportedly been promoted. They have been promoted. They're going to be caught. But they've lost 10 games this season already, which, you know, it's rare to be close to the top of your table and have lost 10 games, but this is how competitive League Two was this season for everyone. Stockport, who are top of the table right now, have lost 6 or 7, I think. Barrow, who are 6, have lost 11, but they're still 6, so they will be in the playoff contention.
Stockport is near Manchester. Barrow is far away from everywhere else. Sorry, just a little geography.
And Wrexham is in North Wales, so... Well done to them. They'll be in League One next season, like we said, back to back. And yeah, the fact that they have high profile owners, of course, in Ryan Reynolds and your friend Rob McElhenney, great. It's good for them. But they're just building this team up nicely, this club, to take it to the next level. So I think at some point in the near future, they will be in the Premier League. I'll tell you that now.
Heard it here first.
Exactly. Chelsea coach and future US women's team national team coach Emma Hayes turned to poetry, Gab, when asked about her physical confrontations with Unai Seydoval, the Arsenal coach, earlier this month. I bet you like that. She told that story about her son as well, with her son. And
of course, her son basically said, you know, referring to the confrontation she had with Idaval, when Idaval got all persnickety about multi-balls and
what?
Stuff like that, and got in the face.
What did he do wrong?
What
did Idaval do wrong?
I mean, what did he do wrong?
He
showed male aggression, according to Emma Hayes.
Yeah, okay. According to you, wrong?
No, according to me, you shouldn't. If you're a coach, you shouldn't get involved with a player. It doesn't matter. Even the men's game, you shouldn't get involved with an opposing player. His point was that they had to decide
a multi-ball
system. Yeah, I don't think he should.
What?
That's it. Whatever. I don't care. But anyway, afterwards, Emma Hayes, of course, pushed him, or looked as if she bumped him. And her son said, "Mommy, when we do something like that in school, they tell us to take a timeout."
Yeah.
And she says, and I love the way she put this, she said she reflected on it, and she said, yes, you cannot meet aggression with aggression.
Yeah.
And so she's given herself a timeout, and she's reading poetry, and she has this great quote from Robert Frost. "When at times the mob is swayed to carry praise or blame too far, we may choose something like a star to stay our minds on and be stayed." U.S. Women's National Team future U.S. Women's National Team coach Emma Hayes. This is what you're getting, USWMNT fans. And I love it. Absolutely love it. Jules, this brings us to an end. But we're going to be back on Thursday, right?
Of course.
We have to be.
Yeah.
It's a Champions League quarterfinal. Second round. How about that? Until then, love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjewels, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjewels now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjewels.